So you're there in Exodus chapter 20, and we're closing up our series on the Ten Commandments because we were on the Tenth Commandment, and so I figured it would be fitting to read that chapter as we go to the last one here, which is Thou Shalt Not Covet. And so you see there in verse 17, we have the Tenth Commandment here. It says, Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his maidservant, or manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. Okay, so now what the Catholic Church does is they try to take this commandment and put it into two different commandments because they don't like the graven image commandment. So they try to just hide that one in the first commandment, and then they basically conveniently rip this one into two parts. But let's go to Deuteronomy 5. I want you to just stick your finger in. Keep your finger in Exodus 20. Go to Deuteronomy 5 and verse 21. And you'll see that, well, which one is it? Okay, because basically they'll say, well, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house is one. That's number 9. And then 10 is thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. That's number 10. Okay. Well, let's see. In Deuteronomy 5 verse 21, it says, neither shalt thou desire thy neighbor's wife, neither shalt thou covet thy neighbor's house. So which one is it? Is the house the ninth, or is it the tenth, right? Is it thy neighbor's wife the ninth, or is it the tenth, right? And, you know, I don't think anything's accidental in the Bible, meaning that sometimes I think there's things that are just kind of worded like opposite, or it'll be in a different order just to make that look stupid, okay? And I kind of hit on this with when it comes to end times prophecy on like why there's 42 months, 1,260 days, and a time times and half a time. Why is it used those three different time periods to talk about the same time? Because you can't mess that up, right? You can't try to say, well, this 42 is really not months, it's something else. Or this 1,260 days is not really days, it's years. And so it's just put in there to really show you that that's dumb, okay? To think any different that this is, two separate commandments is ridiculous, okay? And also, this also shows you here that covet, it means to desire something, okay? Now, one thing I want you to see here is that coveting is not inherently wrong, okay? Meaning to desire something is not inherently wrong, okay? I'll show you that. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. And so to covet something means to desire something. But the commandment is talking about desiring something that's not yours, okay? So when it says thou shalt not covet, it's talking about you're desiring something that doesn't belong to you. It belongs to someone else, okay? So that's the core of this commandment is that, you know, that's your neighbor's wife. You shouldn't be desiring your neighbor's wife. She doesn't belong to you. She belongs to your neighbor. And that's your neighbor's house. You shouldn't be desiring your neighbor's house. That's your neighbor's house, not your house, okay? And so it's not saying that to desire your wife is wrong, right? You should covet your wife. And you probably heard this terminology, I covet your prayers. There's nothing wrong with saying that, okay? So it's not like covet is this inherently bad thing. It depends on what you're coveting, though. And in context, coveting here is talking about something that doesn't belong to you, okay? So when, and in some places it'll say, thou shalt not covet, okay? And you can kind of bring it down to that level, thou shalt not covet, but in context, you're talking about coveting something that doesn't belong to you. Now, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 28, you're dealing with spiritual gifts, okay? So this whole chapter is dealing with the fact that, the Holy Spirit gives gifts to certain people, meaning that they have, basically talents, if you will, or, you know, some people are better at some things than others, and the Spirit kind of gives gifts to people as that goes on. And obviously, we're not talking about some charismatic weird speaking in tongues thing, right? You know, where you're barking like a dog and foaming at the mouth. And every time I say that, there's always some charismatic person online be like, we don't bark like a dog and foam at the mouth. I've seen it happen. So, you know what? You may not have done it, but someone has. So, and, you know, your Sith Lord, Benny Hinn, slaying people, you know. And if anybody's not seen that video, it's hilarious, right? You know, where he's like hitting people with this code or something like that, and they made it into a lightsaber, and he's like literally slaying people. That's not what we're talking about when we're talking about spiritual gifts, okay? We're talking about real things like wisdom, knowledge, faith, you know, helps, you know, you have a gift in healing, different remedies, different things like that, that you can have gifts that the Spirit will kind of guide you in that, right? The gift of prophecy, being able to preach, different things like that, okay? Now, 1 Corinthians chapter 12, at the end of the chapter here in verse 28, it says, "And God hath set some in the church, first apostles, secondarily prophets, thirdly teachers, after that miracles, then gifts of healings, helps, governments, diversities of tongues. Are all apostles, are all prophets, are all teachers, are all workers of miracles? Have all the gifts of healing? Do all speak with tongues? Do all interpret?" That's a rhetorical question. You know what the answer to that question is? No. Okay? You should know that by saying, "Are all apostles?" Yeah, we're all apostles. Okay? No. That's ridiculous. So it's basically saying, hey, you know, there's different people that have different strengths, and the Spirit's kind of is helping others in some areas. Okay? So not everybody should be a preacher. Okay? Not everybody, you know, has that kind of gift from the Spirit. And listen, I'm not saying I'm gifted, okay? I understand that, you know, when it comes to preaching, I'm not the top brass when it comes to it. But at the same time, there's some people that don't, that can't even get in front of people and talk, okay? And if you struggle with that to that point where you just get so nervous that you can't get in front of people and talk, you're going to struggle with preaching, okay? And maybe that's just something that you shouldn't be doing, okay? Nothing wrong with that. Okay, it's just stating the fact. But notice what it says here in verse 31 there. It says, "But covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet show I unto you a more excellent way." So he's basically saying, hey, there's these gifts and there's this order. Okay, by the way, diversity is of tongues, which by the way is just speaking with other languages and interpreting other languages. Notice that's on the bottom rung. Okay. And listen, I'm learning another language, and many of you are learning languages and, you know, all that stuff. But that's at the bottom rung, okay? You say, well, why is that at the bottom rung? Because people can get saved. You know, there's people that are saved in every language right now, okay? Meaning that those people can go win those people if all needs be. I'm not against learning another language. I'm learning Greek, and I want to go out to Greece and preach the gospel to them, okay? But, you know, in all honesty, most of them speak English anyway. And so you can go over there and speak to them in English. But that being said is that, you know, you should covet the best gifts, okay? And notice in chapter 14, go to chapter 14, so 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 39. And what I really want to show you is that you can't just say, like, it's bad to covet anything, okay? It's like the misnomer that jealousy is bad. Jealousy is not bad because jealousy is desiring something that belongs to you. Envy is bad because you're desiring something that doesn't belong to you. Okay, so if I'm jealous over my wife, that's good, right? That means I desire her. She belongs to me. Oh, I can't believe you said it. Yes, she belongs to me. But guess what? I belong to her, okay? And so there's nothing wrong with me coveting my wife and being jealous over my wife, okay? But to envy, you know, someone else's wife or to covet someone else's wife, that's where it's wrong. Does that make sense? So anyway, desiring your wife or coveting your wife is not wrong. Notice what it says in verse 39. So here in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 39, it says, "Wherefore, brethren, covet to prophesy, and forbid not to speak with tongues. Let all things be done decently and in order." Now, to give you a synopsis of that chapter, he's basically saying, don't come into a church and speak in a language that no one understands. There's your abridged version of 1 Corinthians 14. Don't go into a church and speak a language that no one knows, okay? Doesn't mean that no one in the world knows it. It just means that no one there knows it. And he's basically saying, hey, you know, you should covet the prophesy. I mean, you should covet the preach in the language that people understand, okay? You should desire to do that. And he's saying, it's not saying that you can't speak with another language, but let everything be done decently and in order. If you're going to speak another language, you better have an interpreter there. You better have someone that's explaining to people what they mean. You should not be the Catholic Church that speaks in Latin and no one can understand what they're saying. Or even in a Greek Orthodox Church speaking in Greek and a lot of people that go there don't understand it. Okay? So that's what that's dealing with. But saying you should covet the prophesy, right? You should covet, you should desire to preach. If any man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth a good work, right? And the idea is that you covet that, right? You desire it, okay? So there's nothing wrong with coveting some, you know, things that are good, things that, are godly, or things that belong to you. But that's not what this commandment's talking about. Now, go to Romans chapter 7. So this commandment is talking about a bad desire, okay? Things you should not be desiring. And ultimately, what we'll see here is it's talking about lusting, okay? The desire, you know, lusting after things that don't belong to you. Romans chapter 7, verse 7 here. I love when the New Testament clarifies things, you know, or gives you a little more information about it. In verse 7 here, it says, "What shall we say then? Is the law sin? God forbid. Nay, I had not known sin, but by the law. For I had not known lust, except the law had said, thou shalt not covet." So lust, when it hath conceived, bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. You know, lusting, you know, as far as lusting after someone's wife, lusting after a woman that's not your own, right? If you lust after a woman in your heart, you've committed adultery already with her in your heart. You know, these ideas of, you know, and it's interesting how adultery and coveting go hand in hand. You know, even in this verse of, you know, coveting someone else's wife or desiring someone else's wife will lead to what? Adultery. Okay. So these things are a lot of times linked when it comes to that. Go to Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12. And covetousness a lot of times gets into materialistic type stuff. You know, because in that commandment, what do you see? You see your neighbor's wife, but then you see your neighbor's house and his ox and his ass and, you know, just anything that belongs to him, right? And you're desiring items or goods or riches, right? And that's what you're dealing with. And I love this passage right here because this is what Jesus is saying about covetousness. And this is one of my favorite verses in the Bible when it comes to I guess when you're a Christian and you know, when the world has all the fancy things, or the world has the boat, they have the summer house, we went to the beach and we were in a beach house and you know, it's like, man, it'd be nice to have, you just own this and come here anytime you want. And then I'm just thinking, you know, we were talking about it, and I was like, yeah, but how many times would you actually come out here? Like, when do you have the time to just be like, all right, we're going to go out this week, we're going to go out that week? You know, it's just what, you don't have time to do that type of stuff. On top of the fact you don't have the money, okay? You know, unless you have a ton of money and you're just rolling in the Benjamins, you are not going to be able to buy that type of stuff. But you look at that type of stuff and be like, man, that'd be cool to have that. It'd be cool to do this. But in the end, that's not what we're here to do, okay? We're not here to just enjoy every little thing in this life, okay? This what we need to really be thinking about is that this world is not our own, meaning that we're pilgrims, we're strangers, we're just sojourning here, you know, and just to let go of the things of this life. Now look at Luke chapter 12, Luke chapter 12 and verse 13. Luke chapter 12, verse 13, it says, "And one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother, that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you?" So it sounds like Jesus was just lording over everybody, wasn't he? Right? No, obviously he wasn't. But notice what he says in his response to this, right? So he comes up to Jesus and said, "Hey, can you divide the inheritance here? Can you deal with this?" And notice Jesus' response to this. Verse 15, "And he said unto them, Take heed and beware of covetousness. For a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth." And this should be something we all think about. Okay, there's nothing wrong with having things. And, you know, obviously you have things that you need to get by. You need a vehicle. You need this or that to, you know, to serve a function, right? But the idea here is the fact that, you know, we need to not just be like, that's what defines us, right? Is what defines you your house? Is what defines you your vehicle? Is what defines you, you know, any type of possession that you have? Because is that what your life consists of? And to be honest with you, that's what most people's lives consist of, is the possessions they can get, okay? It's all about, I'm saving up for this, I'm saving up for that, and I need this or that. But is that what defines your life? You know, if you died, would it be like, man, he had some really cool stuff? Or when you die, would it be like, man, he did great things for God? Okay? And that's the thing that you should be thinking about, is the fact that, okay, you know, what, my life was not about the things that I possessed. Okay? And I'm talking about material things, because you're talking about land here. And this is not saying it's wrong to have land, it's wrong to have possessions, but that should not be what your life consists of. That should not be why you live. That should not be what your end game is. That shouldn't be your goal in life, is to have these certain possessions or to hold on to those. Because listen, those things can be taken away like that. And if you're holding on to that, then that could destroy your life, right? Let's say your whole life is possessions and then everything got taken away, you know, sometimes it may be better to take it all away, and then you don't have to worry about any of it. Okay, and I'm going to get to that when it comes to Ecclesiastes. But notice what it says as you keep reading here, because he's going to give a parable about it, okay, about having possessions or worrying about your possessions and all that. Notice what it says in verse 16. It says, "He spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, This will I do." And this is always funny to me, because it's like this guy talking to himself. Right? He's saying this within himself. It's like, this is what I'll do. You know? "This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry." So this guy's just having a great conversation with himself. And notice what it says here in verse 19. "And I will say to my," verse 20. "But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided?" So he's basically saying, you don't even know when you're going to die. What is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. You know, you ought to say, "Lord, if the Lord will, we shall do this or that." And, you know, and live and, you know, continue in the city and buy and sell and get gain. You know, the idea is that you don't know when you're going to die. But notice what it says right after in verse 21. It says, "So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." So the idea is that you're just laying up treasure for yourself and you're not rich toward God, meaning that, you know, there's nothing going to be shown at the end of your life. The whole book of Ecclesiastes is about this. That if you live for all the things that are under the sun, it's all vanity and vexation in spirit. Because who's going to have it after that? Not you. Okay? Because it's basically saying, you know, whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? He's basically saying all that stuff that you stored up is going to someone else now. And you don't even get to enjoy it. And you know what? I have a 401k, you know, through my company, which is like a retirement, right? But I don't plan on retiring. Okay? And my idea of, like, saving up money is for my children. Okay? The parents lay up for the children and not the children for their parents. Meaning this is that, you know, I have it there, you know, if they need it later on or whatever, or for my funeral or whatever they need, you know, whatever costs, so that I wouldn't be a burden on my children. Okay? But ultimately, I'm not looking at that and be like, man, I can't wait until that thing, just, yeah, I can cash that thing out. I'm going to work until I die, okay? And the thing is that, obviously, Christianity-wise, I'm going to work until I die, but I even plan on that in general anyway. And, or at least until I'm, you know, not just mentally senile and don't know where I'm at, okay? But that being said is that I don't believe there's anything wrong with laying up, okay? But it shouldn't be like I'm going to lay up so I can just do nothing, okay? Anybody that retires, okay, I've seen this happen time and time again, they retire and then they just die real soon. Because you go from, like, working hard, doing this or that, and then you go to, like, this sedentary, like, doing nothing, and you just fade away. And I tell anybody that retires, and I told my dad this, you know, when he retired, I said, you need to have a hobby, you need to be doing something, right? You need to be doing something that's going to keep you busy, keep you moving around. Just don't just sit there and just, like, blah, you know, and the idea, though, is the fact that, you know, you need to be working. We are meant to work, you know, that's it. Especially men, we are meant to work by the sweat of our face. And, you know, this idea of just working till retirement, and you have that idea, like, I'm working till Friday. And, you know, I used to be that way. You know, when I first started working, I'm like, I can't wait till Friday. Now I'm like, Friday, man, I need to start writing some sermons. I need to start doing this a little earlier during the week, you know, before it gets to Saturday, and then Sunday comes. I got to work on Monday, and I'm taking a break. But I'm being a little facetious, but not really that much. But all that to say is that this idea of working till Friday or working till retirement, okay? How about we work till Jesus comes? Why don't we work for the night is coming? Why don't we work till we die? And that's the idea that we should have, not like this guy in Luke where he's just like, I got everything now. Now I'm just going to sit back, relax, drink some sweet tea on my back porch, and just, you know, not do anything, okay? Because what did God say? Thou fool, this night thy soul is required of thee. Now you're not even enjoy it. Go to 1 Timothy chapter 6. And ultimately, covetousness comes into the aspect of loving money, okay? Loving money. Listen, Ecclesiastes says money answers to all things, and that's true. You know, I mean, money. You need money to pay the bills. You need money. I mean, we need money to pay the bills for this building right here. We have an offering. There's tithing, all that stuff that goes into the aspect that you need money to go on a retreat. You need money to, you know, get materials to go out soul winning. So it's not like money is inherently wrong, okay? But what is wrong is loving money, and that gets into covetousness. You desire it, okay? And you know what? You say, well, you got to be for Trump, right? Because of Biden. Listen, I'd be for a squirrel over Biden. I mean, I think a squirrel has a better mental capacity than, you know, creepy Joe, okay? But let's face it, Donald Trump loves money. Just openly says he loves money, okay? Now, is Donald Trump probably going to be better for our country than Joe Biden? I mean, like I said, a squirrel would be better, okay? And not to, like, degrade squirrels or anything like that, but go to 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 7. It says, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out, and having food and raiment, let us be there with content. And that's the real lesson we should be learning with covetousness, is just be content with the things that you have, right? Is, you know, you have what you have, be content with that. There's nothing wrong with getting other things and all that stuff, but it shouldn't be this idea of, like, that's all you live for, is to have new things or bigger things or better things. Just be content with what you have and just let the blessings flow if God provides more for you in the end. Now, verse 9 there says, but they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil. And I'm tired of people, you know, all the other versions will say something to the effect of the love of money is a root of evil or a root of some evil. No, it's the root of all evil. Okay? Notice what it says here as you keep reading there. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after. See how that's synonymous there? While men some men coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. You're dealing with Christians here, okay? I'm not talking about reprobate people right now. I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm not talking, you know, I did mention Donald Trump. But I'm talking about saved people can get caught up in this, okay? The love of money, they're coveting after it, and it pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, meekness. Fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal life, whereunto thou art also called and hast professed a good profession before many witnesses. And so the idea is that you need to be content with the things that you have and just not get caught up in that, okay? And you can get caught up in that where it's just like, and I know people, and I know you know people that work and that's all they care about. That's all they care about. I still remember to this day I got a job offer and they wanted me to, like, basically take over this whole, like, start up a structural department in a company. And be the guy that's going to travel around and do all this stuff. And I remember they offered me something, and it was going to actually be, my company was going to counteroffer more than that. And they're like, well, you know, when I started this company, you know, I took a pay cut, you know, to come here. And I'm like, well, listen, because I love it. You know, this is what I live for. I work. I wake up in the morning, and I live to work. And I'm just going to be frank with you. I work to live. I don't live to work. Okay? Meaning that when it comes to Christianity, yes, I live to work for God, okay? But when it comes to paying the bills, I work so that I can live and pay the bills and serve God, okay? But my mind isn't like, I just wake up so I'd be like, I need to make more money. I need to have more. I need to, get more on this or that. And I'm all for being profitable in the company and doing great and all that stuff. But that is not why I wake up in the morning. Okay? And that's not the attitude as a Christian you should have. And obviously, the people that love God and go to work and work hard, but they're not loving money, listen, God will bless that person. They'll bless their work, and that company ultimately will be blessed because they have godly people working for them, okay? But loving money is not the route to go. And anybody that loves money is going to end up hurting people to get there, okay? You're going to step on people to get there. And go to Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, it gives a warning to rich people, but it doesn't say that they're evil for being rich. It's just basically saying, beware. Don't trust in uncertain riches. Okay? And, you need to beware of this because you're going to be more susceptible to fall into covetousness. Right? The more money you have, the more money. It's just, and what you're going to see here in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 is the more you make, the more you want. The more you're not satisfied. Okay? Now, in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 10 here, it says, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? So notice what it's saying here. It's basically saying, and I remember my cousin saying this one time. He didn't say it exactly like this, but he's basically saying, the more you make, the more you end up spending. Okay? When you increase when you increase in what you make, you increase in how you live. Okay? And we need to try to tailor that back. Okay? If you get a raise, you shouldn't just be like, all right, now time to buy this. Okay? And nowadays, with everybody in the church, it's like you get a raise, you're like, all right, I can finally afford to feed that kid. Not quite that bad, but you know what I'm saying. It's like you get a raise, you're like, oh, man, he's struggling, struggling with, because we got another one on the way, and all that. But all that to say is that it's very true. You get paid more, you get a raise, and you're like, all right, I can do this or I can do that. And it's just a fact of life. That's just the way the cookie crumbles. That's the way it goes. But what it's saying here is that when you have things that you're not using, okay, it's different if, let's say you had a whole bunch of money. Let's say you're running a farm, right? That costs a lot of money, okay? Like all the equipment that you have to do that. You think about like baling hay or doing stuff like that. That equipment is, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars for all that stuff, okay? And so, but you're using it. Do you see the difference? Like you're using it. What it's saying here is that basically you have all these things, but the only thing you're really doing is looking at it. Right? You buy all this stuff and it's like, I can't use it because I don't have time to do it. Or you just have so much stuff that there's just not enough time in the day to use everything you have. So you should really think about this. Does everything I have a purpose? Am I using it? Or is it just like there for show? It's just there to, it's just kind of taking up space. And I'm not talking about the treadmill because everybody's got the treadmill, right? That just takes up space and no one ever uses it, right? But you know what I'm talking about, though. Like, as far as, like, buying things and then you just don't use it at all, okay? And you know what? You could look at this in many avenues, but that's the way I kind of look at it. It's like, am I using it, okay? And if I'm not using it, what's the point? Why is this here? Why is this just taking up space? But notice what it says in verse 12 there. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. Okay? And this is the idea that if you have all these nice things, okay, meaning like you just have like riches galore and you're wealthy, meaning that you're just afraid something's going to happen to it. Right? People are going to break in and steal it. But if you don't have anything, there's nothing to lose, right? That's the principle, right? There's nothing to lose. If you don't have anything, then they can't take anything. And I'm not saying to live like a pauper and that you got to live in poverty. The Bible says that give me neither poverty nor riches. Okay? So it's not saying live, like a bum on the side of the street. OK? okay, with no house or anything like that and nothing over your head. It's not, that's not what the Bible's teaching at all. But it's basically saying you don't want to desire to be rich, okay, and to have all these things that you're just going to be worrying about, right? Is that, you know, do you care? If you care that much that something's going to happen to a possession you have, then it's probably not good to have it, right? Or do you say, well, if something happens to it, so be it, whatever. You know, just deal with it. And Ecclesiastes 5 there, just keep reading there. It says in verse 13, there is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. Okay, so it's basically saying riches that are going to end up hurting their owners. Okay, but those riches perish by evil travail. And he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. And the same principle, you know, that we saw in 1 Timothy chapter 6, is that you brought nothing into this world, you could take nothing out. Listen, the only thing that you're going to have to show for eternity are the things that you did that have eternal value, okay? And you're not taking physical things with you. Okay, and so you got to understand that, hey, what is going to have weight and what's going to be last forever are things that you don't see. Okay, and you need to just remember that when it comes to covetousness. We go to Colossians chapter 3. And people take this too far, okay? When I say not to covet, that doesn't mean that you can't eat organic food, okay? And if you don't eat organic food, that's fine. But you say, that costs too much money. I need to use less money over here to do this. I'm not saying that you can't spend money and need to have higher money to have better things like food and nutrition and stuff like that. Does it make sense? Like, it's not saying, like, I just need to live off Doritos and Lucky Charms my whole life because I don't want to spend the money on stuff that's going to be more nutritious or whatever, which actually in most cases the nutritious stuff costs less anyway. But all that's to say is that there's nothing wrong with like saying, hey, I'm going to spend more money over here if it's for something like that. Okay, so don't take it too far. And I've seen people do that where they're just like, I'm just going to live off, you know, this stuff even though it's bad for me because it's cheaper. Okay, you know, that's not what I'm talking about. Colossians chapter 3, verse 5, it says, mortify therefore your members, which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, or inordinate affection, evil, concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Okay, so notice how it links covetousness with idolatry. So notice how we're getting back to the second commandment, right? You kind of saw covetousness going back to adultery. But now it's going into idolatry, right? And you can understand how this can happen, right? You idolize someone's house. You idolize someone's car. You idolize, you know, some possession that someone has, and that is like your idol. That is what you are basically worshiping, okay? Or even something that you do have, and it's just like, that's your baby. And I've seen people do that with their vehicles, right? And I'm not against, like, taking care of your vehicles and, you know, all that stuff and keeping them clean and or whatever, but to the point where it's just like, you know, no one can touch it, no one can be in it. Like, it's, you know what I'm talking about when it comes to certain things that people have, and it's just like this enshrined item that is their baby. And if they lost that, they would literally lose sleep and just like be distraught. Okay, and you know, when I got in a wreck with my truck, you know, it was a new truck and everything, I just don't care that much. You know, like, obviously it sucks. Here's why I didn't like it, because I had to deal with the insurance, and I had to deal with all these other things, and I had to go find a ride here, and I got to do this and that. It makes your life harder, okay? That's why I didn't like it. But it's not like, oh, it's my baby, you know? It's like, you know, and the truck I have now, you know what? I feel the same exact way, okay? Meaning, if that thing got totaled tomorrow, I'd be like, all right, whatever. You know, hopefully I'm not totaled with it. But that being said, is that, going through all that rigmarole of dealing with it, you know, I don't like that. But at the same time, I'm not like, man, you know, that's my baby. That's my pride and joy and all that stuff. And my children are like, are we chopped liver? You know? Now, obviously, you know, what you should be really caring about is your family. You know, people, the Lord, and doing God's work, okay? And not idolizing items, okay? Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Ultimately, this can be a sin that's in a church that can cause people to be kicked out, okay? Because I don't want people in this church that just love money and, you know, that's all they care about. And I don't think I've ever met anybody in church that's been like this, you know, but people that come to the church and that's all they ever talk about is money, business, making deals, like just, it's all about money, it's all about everything that they possess, it's all about that type of stuff. But this could be something that can affect the church, meaning that you're like drawing people in to start loving covetousness and all that stuff, and it's veering you off the path, and that's why this could be a sin to where you need to be kicked out of the church. Notice what it says in verse 6. Your glorying is not good. Know ye not that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump? So the idea is that these sins can cause other people to do it. Okay, that's the idea of why you would kick someone out of the church, is that you don't want it to affect everybody else, or infect, however you want to look at it. Purge out therefore the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump, as ye are unleavened. For even Christ our Passover sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast not with old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. I wrote unto you in an epistle not to company with fornicators, yet not altogether with the fornicators of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or with idolaters, for then must ye needs go out of the world. But now I have written unto you not to keep company if any man that is called a brother be a fornicator or covetous. So notice that being covetous is on this list. Okay? It's interesting because idolatry is on there too, right after that, and it says covetousness, which is idolatry. So these definitely have a hand-in-hand relationship here. It says, or a railer, or a drunkard, or an extortioner, which with such an one know not to eat. So basically it's stating that, hey, you know, these people are the ones that should be put out from among yourselves, you know, and they can affect other people, okay? Think about it. The love of money is the root of all evil, okay? So if there was a sin in the church that could cause a lot of harm, don't you think it's covetousness? That would cause people to get out of the things of God or to basically make things idols in their lives and all that. Okay, so this is something that you need to be careful of. Again, we're not exactly in a metropolis here, or we have a bunch of Wall Street people in here that are, you know, like that are like that. But wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. You know, we should all be looking in the mirror and saying, hey, you know, when I'm talking to people, is it about everything that I have? Is it just possessions? Or when we come together, is it talking about the Bible? Is it talking about, you know, family? Is it talking about things that matter? Okay. Ultimately, things that matter, okay? So don't get me wrong. You're going to be like, I'm not going to show Pastor that new thing I got, you know, because he's going to be like, I'm talking about possessions. That's not, I hope you know that that's not what I'm talking about. Right? You can never show me something and be like, I got a new puppy. It's covetousness. Puppy, you know. You bought that, I'm pointing at Taylor because she's going to get a puppy or whatever. But, you know, don't be silly with it, you know what I mean? But at the same time, if that's all you ever talk about is like the things that you have and the things that you want to have and just things like that, then that's a problem, okay? You need to just lay off the possessions and get into the things of God, okay? Go to Habakkuk chapter 2. Habakkuk chapter 2. Covetousness. Again, if you say, well, how is money the root of all evil? Well, think about the devil. What did he do? What was the reason for his fall? Okay? He desired or coveted, you know, God's throne and his glory and everything that was about that. And so, yeah, obviously covetousness is what caused the devil to sin. Okay? But covetousness can cause all kinds of sins. It can cause, obviously, adultery. It can cause murder. It can cause idolatry. So covetousness is last on this list, but I would not put that as being like, okay, this is the least to worry about. Okay? So in Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 9, it says, woe to him that covereth an evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. Thou hast consulted shame to thy house by cutting off many people, and hast sinned against thy soul. For the stone shall cry out of the wall, and the beam out of the timber shall answer it. Woe to him that buildeth a town with blood, and establisheth a city by iniquity. And this is, listen, today, people that are in power are running off covetousness and greed and money, the love of money. All the bureaucrats and all those people that are just in bed with the politicians, and they're building cities off the blood. You don't believe me? New York City passed a bill that you can kill babies up to birth. And New York City is one of the biggest cities, you know, obviously New York State's the one that passed it, but people are clapping when they passed that bill and just cheering and just elated that that bill passed. And what you have is money. And you say, well, how does that apply to abortion? Every abortion ultimately comes down to greed. They don't want to pay for the child. And you're like, well, what about rape? Well, kill the rapist. And then you go and put the child up for adoption. Listen, there's tons of people that can't have children, or they're still, you know, they're having trouble having children, that would, you know, would love to adopt children. But you know what gets in the way? The government. You have to pay $10,000 to adopt a child, which most people don't have, just laying around to do that. And I don't even know what it is. I think that's the last I heard. People are having to go over to Russia or to China to adopt because it's just too expensive to do here. So next time someone tells you, well, you're against abortion, you wouldn't adopt. Yeah, well, none of us are rich enough to adopt half the time, because it's a racket half the time with the government getting involved. But that being said, you know, when it comes to abortion, most all abortions, okay, even if you took out incest and rape, most all abortions are done because people do not want to pay for the child, or they don't want to pay with their time. Right, they want to just go out and do whatever they want to do. It's greed and it's covetousness, and it's murdering 3,000 babies a day in America. So yeah, there's some blood on our hands. You say, well, I want to, you know, I think there's an actress. I don't know who she is or what she was in. I just know that there was this speech that she gave where she was happy that she had an abortion because she would not have gotten that Academy Award or whatever she got. You know, whatever stupid award or golden trophy she got, she would have never got it if she would have had the baby. And people were just clapping and applauding her. That is just pure wickedness. I mean, and she has children now. And I'm just like, man, how would you feel if you were that woman's child? You know, like, this woman just was happy that she murdered one of her children so that she can have this stupid idol in her hand that means nothing. And that will be burned up at the last day. But just pure wickedness that goes along, and the covetousness that goes along with that, yeah, it's the root of all evil. And it still goes on to this day. There's nothing new under the sun. But we need to hate covetousness. Go to Exodus chapter 18. Exodus chapter 18. Exodus chapter 18 and verse 19 says this, and this, just to give you the backstory, this story right here is where Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, comes in to basically give Moses advice, saying, hey, you're going to wear away if you try to deal with every single person here. Meaning, like, he was taking every cause, every situation, and he was trying to deal with them individually. And this is where Jethro is saying, hey, you need to set up some people to help you out here. You know, let them deal with the smaller cases, okay? And notice what it says here in verse 19. Hearken now unto my voice. I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the causes unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men. Notice this. So this is who he's picking. Okay, these are the people you're going to pick to judge these causes and to basically help you out in this situation. Able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness. and place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties and rulers of tens. And let them judge the people at all seasons. And it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. So this is very good advice, right? Delegation of work, okay? And when I first started the church, one of the first things that I delegated was cleaning, the cleaning of the building. And at first, it was Holly and I. We just cleaned the building every week. And I just want you to know how much I love the people that clean this building, okay? Because that alone was just, I was just wearing away, okay? With everything else that I was dealing with, that one little thing, okay? And the hardest thing for me is to delegate, okay? And say, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, because I'm going to do it, okay? I'm just going to make sure it's done, I'm going to do it. You know, if you want something right, do it yourself. No. But the idea, though, is that that's a hard thing to do in a lot of cases. But ultimately, you want people that are competent, okay? And the thing that is said here is that you want people that hate covetousness. You're dealing with people that are going to judge causes and deal with things like that. You want righteous people that are not there to make money and to fraud people, okay? And today, we have a bunch of judges and leaders in our country that love covetousness. They love money. And it's all about that. It's all about being in power and making money. You say, well, why do people hate Trump? They don't really hate Trump. They just want power, right? They're not in the position of power. They want to be in the position of power. Why? So they can make money. That's what it always comes down to. They want power because they want riches. They want money. And it's always going to be that way until the end, okay? But we need to hate covetousness. Okay, we need to take it that far. There is a time to hate, and we need to hate that. We need to hate coveting things that don't belong to us. Okay, go to Psalm 119, verse 36. Psalm 119, verse 36. Psalm 119, verse 36. Psalm 119, verse 36 here, it says, incline my heart unto thy testimonies, and not to covetousness. If you want to get out of covetousness, you know what you need to do? You need to start reading the Bible. You need to start reading it and just getting into it and coveting that. You know what you should really be desiring is to know God, to know who He is, to know the Bible in and out. You say, I know it all. You don't know anything then. If anybody says they know the Bible, you don't know anything. You need to start from the beginning and just keep reading. Okay? The more you know, the more you realize you don't know. But you should desire that. You say, I don't have that desire to read. Then read it till you do. Read it until you start desiring it. You know, to get the first love back, what do? You start doing the first works. Start working at it. And at the beginning, it may just be out of duty. And it may be hard. And you may not like it, but eventually you'll love it. And if you don't love it, then check your salvation. Because someone that's saved, that's reading the Bible, it will eventually, listen, the Bible is the most comforting book. I don't care if I'm reading through Judges or Leviticus. There is something about the comforting words and wholesome words of Jesus Christ that always just speak to my heart and say, this is home. This is where I want to be. And when you start reading this, you know what you're going to find out? Is that it's all about eternity. It's all about things that aren't right now. It's all about looking to eternity, looking to things that you can't see. And you know what you're going to start thinking? This stuff doesn't matter. But people that are covetous and that just hone in on things, you know what that's telling me is that they're not reading. Because if they're reading, their mind would be on that. So go to Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 16. Proverbs 28 and verse 16. So coveting is not wrong inherently, but what are you coveting? Covet the word of God. Covet your wife. Covet your children. Covet your church. Covet your church family. Covet soul winning. Those are the things you should be coveting. But coveting material things and coveting things of this world that are going to fade away, that don't matter, you know, that's just dumb, really, in the end. But Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 16 says, the prince that wanteth understanding is also a great oppressor. And just to kind of understand what that means there, wanteth means that it's lacking. Okay? you know, wanteth, like it's meaning it's wanting. You're found wanting. This prince is found wanting in understanding. Does that make sense? It's not that he's like wanting to be understanding, okay? It means he's lacking it, okay? So it's basically people that don't have understanding, they're great oppressors, okay? But it says, but he that hateth covetousness shall prolong his days. And I love how the Bible puts that. You know, it puts that strong language on there that you just need to hate it. You know, if you start getting to that realm where you're just coveting after things and material things, you should be like, I hate that. Hate that. You know, you should hate every false way, but you should just hate the fact that you would just desire these material things that don't matter. You know, one of the things that my dad taught me growing up was not to be materialistic, okay? And I remember he would, like, one time he bought me a dirt bike and a motorcycle. It wasn't a motorcycle. It was a little dirt bike and stuff like that. And every time he ever got me something like that, you know, I'd be excited and I want to ride it and all this stuff. But he'd always tell me, he's like, what's more important than any material thing? And he'd always make me say it, but he'd always say that Jesus was more important, okay? And it was just this grounding of, like, this material stuff is worthless, you know, compared to Jesus, okay? And, you know, that type of stuff sticks with you. You know, the fact is that, yeah, it's not like he was saying it was wrong for me to have this or he wouldn't have gotten it, right? But, and my dad, you know, gave me things. And listen, we didn't grow up as the most rich people on the block, okay? But we also weren't the poorest. But I had a good family, still have a good family, but, you know, growing up, I had a good family with parents that were together, and they gave us things. But at the same time, one thing that my dad taught me is to be grateful for the things that you have and not to covet after material things. And you know what? I needed that as a kid, you know, where I'd just be like, I want this, I want that. And anytime my kids get to that, you know, there'll be points where they'll be like, you get them something, you're trying to be nice, but then they're just like, I want this, I want that. I'd be like, stop, you're not getting anything now. You know, it's just one of those things where you got to nip it in the bud early that, hey, you know, we need to stop desiring all this material stuff and be like, if you're going to be like this, I'm going to take away what you already have. You know, like, it's just one of those things that you got to nip that stuff in the bud. And you know what? A lot of times it goes away, you know, and they realize, okay, I don't need to have all this stuff. I almost thank God that, like, all the Toys R Us is dead now and KB, you know, like all these toy stores, because, like, literally, they only see what we get them, you know? And I know there's still, like, Walmart and all this stuff, but with COVID and stuff like that, we're doing everything online as it is. So I know when they get older, they can search up Amazon and look up that stuff. But you don't have all that stuff. When I was a kid, Toys R Us, I mean, good night. You know, every aisle, except for the girls' aisles, obviously. But go to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. We should not, as Christians, be known to be covetous, okay? And really, we should just be normal. Does that make sense? Like, don't be ridiculous where you're just, like, clothed in rags and, you know, like, you're like, look at me, you know, I'm so, you know, not covetous or something like that. It's like, just be normal. Just live normal lives, have normal clothes, have, you know, you don't have to, like, drive a beater that's, like, you know, popping and banging and people are hitting the deck, you know, like Uncle Buck or something like that. You don't have to live like that. But at the same time, you need to know that, hey, we should not be known for being covetous people that just desire nice, like, everything that's new and, you know, the new iPhone all the time, you know. Am I stepping on toes with the iPhone? Brother Dave's not here. He's always the iPhone iWatch thing, right? So, I don't know what's different about the iPhone, you know, just on a tangent here, but, you know, every time an iPhone comes out, I'm like, what's different about this thing? They put a new number on it? Is it the number? Is it just like there's a new number and that's just appealing? No, I'm just kidding. Brother Dave's iPhone's like not working right now too, so he's not here to even defend himself. Anyway, so going on here in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 1, it says, be therefore followers of God as dear children and walk in love, as Christ also had loved us and had given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet smelling savor. But fornication and uncleanness or covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becometh saints. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor a covetous man, who is an idolater. Notice how it just always links those two together. Hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. For ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. And I know we kind of hit on that last part this morning, but the idea is that, you know what, you need to walk in the new man, and the new man is not a covetous person. Okay? If you're covetous, that means you're not walking in the Spirit. Okay? And what it's saying here is that, you know, a covetous person hath no inheritance in the kingdom of God. Okay, and what people do with this is to be like, well, then they're not saved. They're going to hell. No, your flesh and blood shall not inherit the kingdom of God. Okay, and covetousness is a work of the flesh. And so if you're coveting and you're coveting things that don't belong to you, that means you're in the flesh. And the Bible stating here that it should not be once named among you as become a saint, meaning that as a child of God, as a saint, as someone that's sanctified by the word of God, by the blood of Christ, we should not... They should not be looking at a Christian and be like, those are covetous people. Instead, you should be looking at they should be looking at us and saying, hey, those people live normal lives and they care about the things of God. It should not be they care about all their possessions, they care about all these different things. We're not Kenneth Copeland. Okay? Kenneth Copeland is a great example of someone that is a covetous man. Okay, the guy's not saved, right? He's a false prophet. Okay, so I don't want to say that it's like become a saint, you know, as become a saint. This guy's not a saint. It's a false prophet. This guy has like a G6 plane or something like that or whatever it is, and he's got all these mansions. Think of Joel Osteen and all that stuff. Listen, I don't care how big our church gets, and I don't care if we're rolling in millions of dollars. I will not be living in like these mansions with swimming pools and all this other stuff. That's ridiculous. No one needs to live like that in this life as a Christian, and it's not needed, okay? They have like a million rooms in there and all these different things, and it's just this luxury that's ridiculous, okay? So that being said is that we need to not be, as Christians, be covetous. So thou shalt not covet is the 10th commandment, but do you see how it just melts? I don't want to say it melts, but it just affects all the other commandments too. You know, adultery, idolatry, it can get into murder, right? Why people would commit murder because of covetousness. And just, you know, all those different things, taking the name of the Lord in vain. I mean, you could think of a lot of things that would affect and how covetousness can ruin that. And you think about even honoring thy father and thy mother and how children will disdain their parents because they don't give them enough things or whatever the case may be. And so covetousness is just one of those that even Paul, that was like, you know, we use thou shalt not lie or thou shalt not bear false witness as the one to say, hey, this is why you should know that you're in trouble, right? Paul's was, I had not known sin and I had not known lust except the law had said, thou shalt not covet. And that was his example of like, the law slew me and I died, you know? And the idea of that commandment right there, because it really does kind of affects a lot of other commandments. You know, why would people lie in a lot of cases? Because they want to make money. Why do people steal? Why are you stealing something unless you want it, right? That doesn't belong to you. And that commandment is just like, oh, by the way, don't covet, which is like, you know, kind of the root of a lot of these other commandments that you'd have there. Now, so that's the 10 commandments. Now I got to find another series to do on this, on Sunday afternoon. Now, I really do like, I enjoy doing series like these, you know, because it just really, just personally, it helps me to know what I'm going to preach on. But I enjoy just going through these and kind of digging into some of these things that are really well known. I might do, you know, I was going through like Bible characters, so I might go back to that and hit on some Bible characters and stuff like that. So especially since we do like the candy at the end for the kids, So those will be like good sermons for them to like remember things, to get some candy, because the Ten Commandments has been a little rough for the remembering a lot of that stuff. So, let's end with a word of prayer. Don't forget that we're going to have the baptisms after the service as well. So, dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for today and pray that you'd be with us throughout the rest of this week. And we thank you for the Ten Commandments that you've given us here and given Moses on the Mount. And Lord, just help us to keep these commandments, but especially as we went through the covetousness, Lord, just pray that you help us not to be covetous people, and Lord, to guard ourselves from that, to hate it, and Lord, to just ultimately be viewing at things that are above. Thank you for the souls that were saved this week and today, and Lord, just pray that you'd be with us and bless Mountain Baptist Church and the families. Lord, pray that you bless the travels of all those that are going home, and Lord, we love you and pray all this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.